Welcome to SurgiSnacks, the podcast that serves up tasty insights for your surgical practice. Join Al Norweb and Justin Rockman of SurgiMate as they deliver bite-sized episodes that feature actionable insights and real-world examples to help you conquer the challenges of surgical scheduling and unlock your practice's full potential. Let's dig in.
Hello, and welcome to another episode of SurgiSnacks. My name is Al Norweb. I'm the Chief Growth Officer of SurgiMate. And if you like to geek out about the business of surgical practices, then you've come to the right place. Here on SurgiSnacks, our idea is to deliver bite-sized content, maybe 10, 15 minutes long, that you can listen to on a jog or on the morning commute, about something interesting in the world of surgical practices. And I am delighted to introduce our guest today, Megan O'Hara, who is the president of AAOE and the practice manager of Robert B. Moriarty, MD, a single doc practice in the New York area. Megan, welcome to the show.
Hi there. Thank you for having me. I'm excited.
Yeah, it's a delight. So nice to have connected with you through the AAOE network and that you're willing to sit down with us today and share some wisdom. Megan, for those that don't know you previously, haven't had the pleasure, could you give us a quick introduction and bio about yourself?
Sure. I'm one of the lucky ones who have been at my practice in Huntington, New York for 22 years. So my resume is sort of short. I've done a lot of hat wearing while I'm here, but I've being at the same place for over 20 years, it's usually a one pager. I'm the current president of AAOE, as you mentioned. I've been a member of AAOE for 19 years. And I also serve on their advocacy council, which I've been doing for about 6 or 7 years. So we do a lot of lobbying and legislative work, trying to get things changed in Washington in the betterment of healthcare.
Wow, that's really, really exciting. So that's at the federal level with AAOE? Okay. Important work. I'm sure some of the people listening to the show will have some ideas of things they'd love to have changed. So you might be getting
Please
people asking.
Please send me your ideas.
Well, great. Well, Megan, I think you know that one of our traditions on the show is that we select a snack that's sort of representative of the topic for today. And what we're going to be talking about is David versus Goliath. So the resilience of small practices today in the face of market consolidation. And our snack for the day is Nerds. Because they might be small, but they pack a big punch. We thought that was a fun one for the show today. So, in this analogy of David versus Goliath, how do you find that you can leverage your size as a small practice actually to stand out against larger healthcare systems or these large consolidated private practices?
I mean, it's definitely a challenge, but I think what makes us stand out, at least in our market, which is the North Shore of Long Island, New York. The ability to provide a patient experience is what keeps us going and keeps our patients coming back to us. The patient experience is, the most important thing. Your patients should always come first. Business and medicine don't always mix. But if you always do medicine first, business will follow. And I've said that my whole career. Being small, we're not stuck to the policies and procedures of the big corporations, the hospital systems. So we can always pivot to make things work in our favor. We just implemented a new EMR in our office, and where everybody else is going crazy and it's 100 doctors trying to learn it and 500 staff. I just quickly came to my staff and said, as long as our billing is going out and our patients aren't affected, the rest will always find its way. In a big corporation, I doubt that that's an option of any kind. So we get to do things a little differently, and keeping the way that we do medicine and keeping with what patients want and what we stand for as a practice, which our business model has always been, I think is what keeps us alive in this growth around us. And there's a lot of it.
Yeah. What are some of the dynamics in the local market, which I'm sure will resonate with people all around the country? What are you seeing up there in upstate or North Long Island?
We're surrounded by the biggest names in medicine, NYU, Mount Sinai, Lenox Hill, Hospital mm-hmm. for Joint Disease, Hospital for Special Surgery, Northwell Health. These are all, they're big hospital systems. They're buying up practices left and right. One is suing another for using the same color in their advertising.
really important questions in medicine.
You know, the things that really, you know, the beam counters should be focusing on. Watching what patients go through when they're going to these bigger groups, and being a patient myself and having family members and people who come to me and say, why did I wait 3 hours? I take all of that back to my practice and I make sure that, you know, we don't make those same mistakes there. We don't scream out people's health insurance through the waiting room because we didn't want to get up out of our chair and walk over. And I think our patients appreciate that and want to be part of it. The hospital systems, I think, right now are just so engrossed in getting more physicians on their ledger sheet that they're not paying attention to what's actually happening in medicine. And I mean, good for them if they're so big they can let 500 patients a year maybe walk off and go somewhere else and not even affect their bottom line. But I couldn't imagine that somebody would be happy with that in the end.
Look, give me an example of like what would be a different experience a patient would have coming to Robert Moriarty versus, you know, calling one of these hospitals for care.
I actually have a human being answering my phone. My staff answers our phones. We don't have a phone tree. So when you have a broken leg and you just came back from the ER and you need to make a follow-up appointment, you're not going to get stuck in some phone system just trying to make the appointment. You can speak to a person, have somebody hear you, understand you, you know, sympathize with you, get you taken care of as quickly as possible, you know, gather the information that they need to make the appointment and let you go as quick as possible. So, you know, normally in a regular phone tree, I think the data says, you know, 5 to 7 minutes in a phone tree. And that's not if you're on hold. That's like once somebody actually gets to you. So that's a lot of time that gets saved on my end. And patients are actually startled sometimes when a human being answers the phone, almost like they're not expecting it, which is very sad to me that people are not expecting to be treated personally when they call a doctor's office.
Yeah. So there's a perception of experience that you can deliver to patients. What do you think the consolidation is doing in terms of the net result on patient experience and outcomes overall? Like, what do you perceive? What are you seeing in the market?
I mean, we're definitely seeing lower, you know, patient satisfaction surveys in the industry. We're seeing, you know, increase in medical malpractice lawsuits, which don't always reflect the actual outcome or the diagnosis. A lot of times, most not med mal carriers will tell you that, you know, lawsuits come from poor patient experience, patients not being heard, patients being ignored, not getting called back. The wrong side surgery cases are few and far between. Most people do it because they weren't treated properly by their physician, whether it be their bedside manner or whatnot. I think it's important to always put the patient first. Everything else will come to you because the whole reason that you're there, and hopefully the whole reason that you went into medicine, was because you wanted to help people. So as long as you're always prioritizing that, I think you'll definitely have a better outcome. I think a lot of the problem that the hospital systems are having is they do come off as though having a we don't care, go somewhere else attitude. Not to say that there aren't patients that, you know, you do have to take that stance on sometimes, but to have that be your general business model just doesn't seem to make sense to me. I know you have to, you know, make budget and all of these things, but without patients, you don't have any kind of a system. So retaining them would be important to me. 3 hour wait times in urgent care centers or waiting rooms. And that's just not acceptable. It wouldn't be acceptable to me as a patient. So why would I do that in my office?
Yeah. Yeah. Makes sense. Yeah. It reminds me of when we were speaking earlier about a practice that we were working with. It was on the larger side. We came across more than one example where the spouse of an employee at that practice had come in for orthopedic care and then ended up getting treated elsewhere because they hadn't gotten followed up with by somebody at the practice. And I do think, you know, that ability for people to get lost in the mix can definitely lead to worse outcomes. And in some cases, like where care is urgent in some sense, like you can have worse outcomes for the patient if they wait too long because of a ball game drop like that. So,
yeah. Absolutely. You know, and we have a rule in our office. If you call in the morning, you will get a call back by lunchtime. And if you call in the afternoon, you will get a call before we leave. you know, the office for the day. And even if that call is to say, I didn't get an answer to your question, I'll follow up with you first thing in the morning. It's just those little things that patients appreciate that will, you know, when they're, you know, at the tennis club and somebody sprains their ankle and they say, oh my gosh, call Dr. Moriarty's office. They were great to me. They took care of me. They were on the ball. They didn't let anything slip through the cracks. They made me feel like I was the only patient there. You know, those are the things that patients want. They're sick of being treated like a bakery where you get a number and you just go in and, you know, see a PA and then see the surgeon and then see the PA again and, you know, getting tossed around and or not followed up on. I mean, that's really, if some one of our spouses didn't get treated in their office, I would definitely be not happy about it.
Yeah.
Knowing about it.
Yeah, agreed. And we did a show, actually, Surgeon Snacks, several months back around reputation management. And one of the partners that had joined us on the show, they mentioned that the number one reason for negative reviews tends to be around wait times in the wait room itself. So you being in the key in on that and provide a better experience than the hospital or a big practice, I mean, it's a real differentiator. So
yeah, absolutely.
Okay, now here's one that's a tricky one. So you've got all these insurance contracts that you have to negotiate as an independent provider. How do you compete with the differential rates that some of these larger groups are able to get because they leverage their size and their volume, against, you know, the big insurance providers?
Yeah. I mean, well, in all honesty, there's not much room for negotiation for a practice my size. Unfortunately, they hand you the contract. If you want to participate in that insurance company, you accept what they pay you. I do think that's also kind of regional. I don't know of really any of my colleagues in the area before they went, you know, to the hospital system or private equity that they were getting really anywhere either, even though they were larger than me. In New York, I mean, there's 50 orthopedics within a 20-mile radius. So if you don't take the insurance contract, the insurance carrier doesn't necessarily care. So there's not a whole lot of that. And even these big systems run into issues where they don't want to accept the insurance contract. Mount Sinai right now is currently, you know, being taken off of Cigna and United Healthcare, I think, because they wouldn't accept the contract. So negotiations are always tough. So I do have to kind of just take what I get. But little tricks that I've learned throughout the years is, we joined an IPA, which is, independent practice organizations that group us all together to get better contracts. So I do get better negotiating rights through them. I also joined the hospital IPA, which they have their own insurance. So that allows me to write them a check every year for $300 and take their insurance plan. We rely on proper billing and not getting downcoded and making sure that our documentation is right, so that if we bill something, we get paid for it and our refund requests are low. Joining, you know, the IPAs or even with insurance carriers, they have preferred provider networks. So you meet all their metrics. And then Cigna has a program that, you know, if you come to me because I'm a silver provider, you wouldn't have to pay your copayment. So it gives the patient some financial respite and it gives us the opportunity to capture that patient where we might not have captured them before. So between all of those little things that we do, we can increase our reimbursement slightly, but it's never going to be what the big groups are able to leverage for themselves.
Yeah, I mean, I've spoken to some independent practitioners who ended up joining larger practices, and when they compare rates, sometimes it's 30-40% difference that the larger groups can demand. And you're right, that's very regional. It depends how much competition there is. Are there alternatives for the insurance providers to work off of? I've got to imagine, though, on the flip side, you might also be able to manage lower overhead than some of these big groups. Is that something you're able to take advantage of, like people wearing multiple hats and having a lot of responsibilities so that you can keep lean, even though maybe you're getting a little less on the top, you're also spending less?
Yeah. So, I mean, orthopedics might be the highest reimbursed specialty, but we also have the highest overhead. Supply-wise alone just puts us in a different category. Because we are a small office, everybody knows how to do everything. with the exception of the clinical people, but even my x-ray tech knows how to make an appointment or, you know, yeah. get a physical therapy script for somebody. So I think that it's important to have good staff. So I can't necessarily say that, especially on Long Island, that my staffing overhead is low, but I definitely am able to run things a little leaner. So we don't, you know, everything isn't in stock all the time. Some things do have to be ordered. Our visco supplementation, we order in bulk so that we can, you know, get a discount on that. So a patient might have to wait a day or two to get it in my office as opposed to the doc just taking it off the shelf in a bigger office and giving it to them that day. Mm-hmm. I do take care of my staff well, and we try to keep our overhead lean. My accountant says that I do a great job at it. He says he can't find anything else to cut. So I don't know what to do. I'm definitely part of some group purchasing plans so that I can get lower rates on that. That's not anything that is specific to what I do. But we definitely invest in our staff because that goes into our business model of making sure that we're making the patient experience the best. I think our business model just always runs into patient care and how we can make that better. And that includes, you know, happy staff, happy doctors, happy PAs, and things like that.
A unified vision of what you're trying to do, right? Every day. Wow. I mean, I think for a lot of big groups, their unified vision is how we improve the P&L. Mm-hmm. And that is a different emphasis, right? I mean, I think they would argue, and they're not wrong, that means providing great care. So like, they can't have a good business long-term if they don't do it, but right. There's a different feeling when everybody in the organization is rowing in the same direction for the same goal and saying, and, you know, rallying around that patient experience, because everybody has to interact with patients. Almost everyone in your office probably does. So
absolutely. At least, you know, 5 times a day, they're going to run into the same issue. So yeah. I also empower my staff to make decisions on the fly that they know that I would make if I were there. Say I'm out on vacation and they don't need to call me to find out something. I've empowered them to make those decisions and do the right thing based on what they know that I would do if I was there. So having staff that feels empowered, it all plays out. It all comes down to the same result. And that's, you know, patient satisfaction. Ultimately, that's what's paying your bills. I saw an article the other day about phone metrics, how many answers you should get on a phone. Well, I mean, if I had to think about the phone metrics to my office, how am I paying attention to the patient care? I'm not. So these big corporations, they're worried about phone metrics and how long it takes to get an MRI back and things like that. And all that data is great data to have, but is it getting you more patients? I don't know how it translates to the other side. I can't see how it does.
Yeah. I mean, I think there's just different strategies too. So, and it's good that there's variety in the market. And so we're running short on time, but I have 2 more questions for you to see if we can squeeze these in, Megan. So, the first is, you mentioned that you just went through an EMR switch. Congratulations, you survived. You're on the other end of that. Big organizations, they're trying to use technology in a lot of ways to help manage the increase in workload and whatnot. How are you using technology or other practices to help ease the administrative burden your team has?
We allow online scheduling directly into our system, which is super important. If you call my office to make an appointment or go through our website, you get the same appointment availability. Right. That to me is the most important over the weekends when everybody's out playing softball and whatever, and they go to the emergency room. They don't have to wait until 9 o'clock in the morning to call my office and then get an appointment at 3 o'clock. They could go on our website and go right to our appointment scheduler and be able to make an appointment for 9 o'clock instead of waiting to call at 9 o'clock, and they can be ready to be seen. Yeah. We definitely employ a lot of outside assistance. We've teamed up with our radiology companies to do our authorizations for us. So that takes it off of our plate. It's one less thing. Never a fan of duplicate work, anybody who has to do the same thing twice. So that also helps us twofold, because now all the information for the radiologist, like the prescription and the reason they're being sent, it's already at the radiology facility. So if the patient forgets what they're supposed to bring, it doesn't stop the workflow in our office. to stop, and, you know, they have the person in the tube. We have to get the script over right away. We don't know what we're doing. It cuts down on that. So that's something that I think is super important. Taking into account, you know, what my staff thinks is a better workflow, I think is always best. It's easy for me to sit in an office and tell them how to do their jobs, but they're the ones doing it every day. So I always bring them in, especially when we were doing the EMR. I made sure that it was matching the workflows that they were already doing and integrated that. I think putting an EMR in an office with 100 providers is definitely chaotic. But the more work you can do on the back end, I think would be better. So I think we handled it well. None of our patients have called us yelling yet, so we're good there.
Well, and you're right. I mean, so self-scheduling and EMR are two examples where if you have a very large group, you can only customize the software so much, and then you start have to make trade-offs. Like, I'm doing what works for 80% of my doctors on the scheduling side or on the documentation side, but I can't do something for 100%. And so inherently you end up physicians having to modify their practices or the way they're doing things. And that's frustrating to them, or worse yet, they just don't. And then you kind of have, you have confusion throughout the organization because not everybody's willing to do everything the same way. So
right.
That's an interesting point. So just being small allows you to be more nimble to actually adopt some of these technologies more fully in that sense.
Yeah, absolutely. I couldn't even see a spine group on their own just coming up with an appointment schedule, because one spine guy might want an hour for a consult, the other one might want 45 minutes. Like you said, it's only so customizable. There's only so much you can do for the spine.
Yeah, agreed.
Sometimes being small is to my advantage.
Being customizable and reducing duplicative work are things we live for here at SurgiMate. So, you know, I'm glad
we're talking.
It's literally,
you like, have to do the same thing twice. It's my pet peeve in life.
Yeah. All right. So, last question, and kind of an interesting one. But so the trend du jour is, and it's been going on for a while, is this market consolidation where practices are coming together, trying to compete against these very large hospital systems that have come together that, for a while now, I've been kind of getting the lion's share of the profitability that's been sloshing around in the healthcare system, aside from the insurers. And we were talking about how healthcare in the U.S. has this way of having like a long, long pendulum to it. It takes a long time, but eventually things like everybody kind of runs in one direction and then they run back. You had, you know, managed care in the 80s went one way for a while. And everyone's like, no, we don't like that. And we ran back to like the fee-for-service PPO model. And now, you know, you got the accountable care organizations and this market consolidation as reimbursements keep getting cut down. So where do you think the pendulum goes from here now? Is it, do you think there'll be a sorting back out of those organizations, or they'll all start to merge between the hospitals and the private practices, or I don't know, what do you think might happen?
I definitely think that this current situation in healthcare is probably here to stay for a little longer than we all would like. There are definitely benefits to every business model. I think that a lot of younger doctors thought that going into a private equity group or a hospital system was the way to go, because you weren't going to have your med mal, you know, to worry about, and you weren't going to have to worry about salary. But you're also stuck to visit counts and documentation purposes, and all the regulations that not only the ACO has, but the federal government has on you. And then you add in Medicare reimbursements going down, lack of access, and things like that. I think some of the people who thought it was a great idea to go into one of these groups and just be a salaried employee, it seems like a great idea. But the flip end of that is a lot of these private equity buyouts, you know, the business model for private equity is to just buy you, build you up over 5 years and sell you to someone else. Well, the guy at the top of that business model makes a lot of money. He makes it on the original sale and he makes it on the final sale. But the young partner in their group, they're not happy because they're holding the load for the doctor who is making a lot of money on the front end and the back end. And they're not happy and they're looking for other opportunities. So I think they're looking to go out on their own again. And I think that mid-range doctors, like my doctor in particular, he's not ready to retire, but he does want to slow down a little bit. He couldn't possibly go into a private equity system or a hospital system and be told, oh, we'll fill out a PTO slip for your vacation that you take every summer. for the last 20 years and submit it, and we'll let you know if you can have it off or not. And you'd be like, what are you talking about? I'm definitely going on my vacation. You know, so there's a lot of different, you know, the different generations of orthopedic surgeon is definitely going to play into that a little bit. I would hope that the federal government would adopt letting physician-owned hospitals be a thing again, because they run more efficiently. They leave autonomy for the physicians. It helps with patient satisfaction. That business model itself is great. Unfortunately, it's not allowed in most cases anymore. So hopefully that will change. I definitely see it changing a little bit, but unfortunately, once, you know, the big bad monster gets all the cookies, it's very rare that they give the cookies back and say, forget it, we're not going to do this anymore. So I don't know that it's gone for good, but I definitely can see, you know, some kind of trends coming out of it where, you know, some of the people go back to independent and go back to the reason that they went to med school and became physicians in the first place.
Yeah, it's interesting to think that maybe it's a young cohort that is going to affect the change, because they're the ones, they're not really benefiting from the current trends. And given the sort of the trajectory of orthopedic surgeons, which is kind of like this, and the need, which is up here, they should ultimately end up with more power in the next 10, 15 years, right? Where there's just not enough of them. And they might have the ability to kind of take back some of that control and be able to keep their autonomy and still have a thriving business. Let's say we're rooting for the small guys and the big guys. We want everybody to succeed and ultimately for patients to do really well.
Yeah, I just want patients to get better. I just want to see people treated well and not complaining all the time.
Well, a quote for me of the session is, practice good medicine, the business will follow. I love that. I don't think I heard that before. Okay. So thanks for sharing that. And for a lot of great insights on this, Megan, it was really a treat to have a chance to speak with you, and hoping to have a chance to meet in person in a couple months at the AAOE annual conference. And, let's be in touch, and hopefully I'll have a chance to do this again sometime soon.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for having me. Honored.
Thank you, Megan. Signing off of this episode of Surgisnacks. Everyone have a great day. Thanks so much.